Privileges of Crusaders. Now, I've talked about in the past reasons why people went on a crusade. But by the time you get to Pope Innocent III and the Fourth Crusade, late Third, Fourth Crusade, there's actually a specific list of these privileges. Now Pope Innocent III, one of the most powerful of the medieval popes and also one who kind of abused his power, had some training as an attorney. And so he has a kind of a definitive formula of privileges that appear at this time. And these are privileges that I'm going to talk about that are enforced by secular as well as church courts. So they're very formalized. And you'll find lists of these in the appendix of the decrees of the Fourth Lateran Council, which was produced in 1215. It's entitled Ad Liberandum. So here are some of the privileges of a crusader. Some of these are actually privileges that would go with any pilgrim, but they're going to be specifically applied. The protection of property and dependents in a crusader's absence. So if you're going on the crusade, your family should be left alone as well as your property. The right to hospitality from the church on his journey. So you should be able to stop at churches and monasteries and receive food and assistance. The right to a delay in the performance of feudal service or in answering court proceedings or a quick settlement of them should the crusader wish. So if you're going on a crusade and you've got something you're supposed to do or you're supposed to go to court, they can either speed it up or delay it. A moratorium on the repayment of debts, an exemption from the payment of interest until the person returns. So not only is your debt held without any problems, but they're not even going to draw interest on it. Needless to say, I don't think it even come back, which most people didn't. Freedom from taxes and tolls. So that's a good deal. So if you're traveling and the guy says, I need payment to cross the bridge, you say, yeah, I'm a crusader, let me on through. If a churchman, to right to enjoy an ecclesiastical benefice while not resident and to raise cash against it. So if you are a member of the church, member of the clergy, and you have land that was given to the church, you can enjoy its use. If you are a layman, you have the right to sell or mortgage fiefs or other unalienable property. Release from excommunication by taking the cross and the possibility of using the crusade vow in place of restitution for something stolen. And of course, we will have some cases. I haven't gotten to those crusades, but there are some people who go on a crusade to get out of excommunication. Another one of these privileges is the license to have dealing with excommunicants and the freedom from the consequences of an interdict. So if you need to talk with someone or to deal with someone who's been excommunicated, which is forbidden, you can do that. And interdict, it means that an entire area is under punishment. Someone in the area has done something wrong, a king or a nobleman, and they don't excommunicate the entire region, but they restrict the sacraments, that you should be able to receive the sacraments no matter what. The right to have a personal confessor who can grant pardon for sins, such as homicide, which is usually reserved for the Pope. The Pope is usually at this time the one who decides whether you can be granted pardon for murdering someone. But if you're on the Crusades, you can have your own personal confessor. So that's pretty good. You have your own priest with you, and Father, you're okay. The ability to count the Crusade vow as an adequate substitute for another taken but not yet fulfilled. And then you get the Crusader indulgence, which is considered the most important characteristic, and that's a declaration by the Pope that penitential exercise in which the crusader was engaging himself, that it would be satisfactory and would compensate for all previous sin. So what you were doing on the crusade would forgive you your sins. And then you reach a point by the end of the 12th century where they began to doubt whether, you know, anything could really be satisfactory because the idea of modern indulgences were starting to develop. So that's some of that's some of the main things that you had as a privilege. And of course, that being listed by the Pope, you know, we're not going to draw that many more people to the later Crusades, but it certainly did provide a blueprint for specifics that you could take to court if you needed to protect your interests or your own personal background, if necessary. Now, as far as sources on this, the Atlas of the Crusades, and most of the Crusade books will talk about this. History of the Crusades, Volume 3 by Runciman will have it in there. And there are others as well. And you can, you might be able to go online. I haven't tried going online because the Vatican has been electrifying itself and putting a lot of the material available worldwide for scholars. And so the possibility of that piece from 1215 being available certainly is amongst the possibilities. And it may also be found, and I didn't end up looking for it there, but the modern medieval source book, which is an online source, may have that. So I hope you enjoyed that. You're kind of filling in some things on the Crusades, little bits and pieces here and there. Such as what I did when I did the Norman conquest of England. So don't forget to come by historyaccordingtobob.com or summahistorica.com and see what's new. Don't forget to send me your questions. Your comments are greatly appreciated. I enjoy listening to your comments from all over the world, and we make some, and frequently we'll make additions and changes that people have put in. So keep those coming. So thank you very much.